Here in Dallas, Texas. Way back in 1989, I started my damn career right here at the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas. When they first built this building, American Airlines Arena, they shipped in Stone Cold Steve Austin and the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, The Rock, to break his sumbitch in. If y'all here in Dallas ready for Monday Night Raw, give me a hell yeah. If y'all here in Dallas ready for WrestleMania 32, give me a hell yeah. I thought that's what you would say. Hey, I got this to say to you folks. I am proud and glad to be back here in Dallas, Texas. Hell, I stomped so many mud holes in this town and walked them dry. Sometimes I got to drink a cold beer and just reminisce about it all. Anyway, enough of that BS. Coming up in a couple hours live on the WWE Network, I got the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar, coming on the Stone Cold Podcast, streaming live on the WWE Network, and that's the bottom line, because I said so. What I'm going to do right now is introduce a man I got a hell of a lot of respect for. I've been in battles with him inside the 20x20 ring. He's one of a kind. He's the only man that had ever done exactly what he's done. Next, and coming up this Sunday, in a Hell in a Cell match, he's going to step in that sumbitch for the last time against Brock Lesnar. It gives me great pleasure. I'm very honored to introduce to you The Undertaker.
Ladies and gentlemen, entering the podcast ring at this time, with a combined weight of 860 pounds, are the new tag team champions, the Super Size Guys. First, representing This Week in Geek and hailing from parts unknown, he is Mike the Birdman Dodd.
Somebody stop the damn match!
And his podcasting partner, representing the GeekCast Radio Network and hailing from the outer reaches of your mind, he is TFG1 Mike Blanchard. These two podcasting giants have joined forces in the World Podcasting Federation. This is Mayhem Mike's. And now, let's get ready to podcast!
Hello and welcome to Mayhem Mike's Episode 5. In the beginning of this, you heard Stone Cold's return to Raw, and of course, TV's Mr. Neal's epic introduction of Mike and I, and our special guest referee, Ryan the Uneven Flow. So we have a triple threat team here this week. Hello, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing okay, actually. Surprisingly well.
Ryan?
I'm good. Happy Remembrance Day / Veterans Day, everybody.
Yes. Which by the time this goes online would have been 2 days ago, and it is now Friday the 13th.
Yeah, but not acknowledging it, it's not cool. It's a fairly important day.
Well, you know, especially
speaking of Friday the 13th, I'm actually surprised that WWE has never done anything with Jason. Do you remember when WCW brought in friggin' Chucky?
I was hoping you were going to mention RoboCop, which was possibly even worse.
I don't know. RoboCop actually rescued Sting. All Chucky did was lip from the friggin' Titantron.
Well, WWE did bring in Terminator, and we had Terminator Genesis released this week, so
sort
of ties in. I was trying to figure out a way to tie that into Hell in a Cell to get things going, but I couldn't because
there's been a lot of stuff going on in the wrestling space over the last couple of weeks, actually. We could probably talk about that first.
Well, we're going to hit the news at the end of the show because I want to start back but right before Hell in a Cell with that Monday Night's Raw. Because Stone Cold returned, and it's been a while since I've seen him on Raw or any of the televised things.
Aside from his podcast afterwards.
But that's on the WWE. I'm saying actual USA, sci-fi, whatever, actual broadcast television. And he came back and did an amazing intro. I thought that was great. And, you know, I've said before, we've done four episodes of this show so far. I'm not the biggest Brock Lesnar fan because I'm more of a fan of the people that actually I understand his deal. He gets paid for showing up when they want him, and I get that. But I admire the guys more like John Cena, where he's there every day working his ass off.
You say as Cena's on break.
Okay, yes.
Everybody's earned it, though, all things considered.
No, you're right.
Rusev and Lana are on a fucking break because they're fucking off with their honeymoon and whatever the hell else. So.
Well, that is Lana somewhat important. Fucked up her hand.
Yeah.
Rusev's hurt, isn't he?
I think so, yeah. But anyway, so when this Raw happened right before Hell in a Cell, Stone Cold came on there, and part of his spiel at the end was that he was going to have Brock Lesnar on the Stone Cold podcast. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll give it a watch, and you know, I'll give Brock a somewhat of a chance. And it's more so for me, and Ryan pointed this out multiple times last episode, be mad at the bookings, not what's on TV. Well, how can I be mad at the bookings when that's not what's shown on TV? What's shown on TV is their characters. So I've never cared for Brock's character. I just never have. So I wanted to check the Stone Cold episode out, and the guy has got an amazing story.
Yeah, he's very different. He's different, yet he's the same. He's kind of Chris Jericho always says, your wrestling persona should be yours turned up to 11 or something like that, and that's kind of what he is. Yeah, he's filled with interesting stories, but he's not really a people person. Like, he's really quiet. And I mean, Heyman always tells the story that if you want to get a hold of him, he doesn't actually have a phone. You got to call essentially a payphone that's at the end of a driveway that's about a mile long to his home. Yeah. Like, he doesn't go out there much, doesn't do a lot of interviews and that kind of thing. It was interesting that he kind of opened up to Steve, who I guess they're friends. Obviously, famously, there was the incident where Steve walked out, but it wasn't because he had to job to him. He was mad because it should have been on pay-per-view, he thought, and I don't know, maybe he was right, but it was interesting to see that they were actually friends, that kind of thing, because I can't remember them interacting much over the years,
I mean, the Stone Cold interview with Brock was really eye-opening to me as far as who Brock is. I still don't care for his character, but that's why I like I wish Stone Cold would do more of them. I know he can only do so many at a time or whatever, but I wish there were just more of them. Because so far he's had Paige on there, he's had Triple H,
Well, he's got his actual podcast, which is almost exactly the same, and it's worth listening to. I think I mentioned it last time. Yeah. And I don't know, I've mentioned it before. I mean, he and Jericho both have really good podcasts and both have good conversations. Like, if you're into wrestling, it's definitely worth listening to. And for the record, I'll add, I'm not a huge fan of Lesnar's character either. I understand what they're doing with him. Like, he's he's not even really a character. It's more of a, he's an attraction. I think Heyman said that about him before, that, you know, he's the, you know, he's the giant or the eighth wonder of the world or whatever. He, you know, you pay money because you want to see him beat somebody up, but he's not a guy you pay money to hear on the microphone. And part of that's because he can't. I mean, he's never been a great, you know, mic worker. I mean, that's the main reason for Paul Heyman.
I think there was a comment during that like interview where he says, I let Heyman do the talking because he speaks way better than I ever could, or something all along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, it was all edited during the rebroadcast.
And for the record,
and something a little more controversial.
For the record, that's something all of us could say, though. I think pretty much anybody would say that Heyman can speak better.
I often wonder, I think I said this a couple episodes ago when, I don't know, it might have been the WrestleMania episode we did this year. I don't know how Heyman doesn't lose his voice when he says Brock's name, when he does the inflections and changes his voice to be more sense. I honestly don't know how that guy doesn't lose his voice on a nightly basis when he's working with and for Brock and for Doug. I just have no clue how that guy takes care of his voice, because oh my god, some of the tones that come out of it, wow. Alright, so Hell in a Cell, overall thoughts, guys?
I think it's one of the best pay-per-views we've had this year. I would call it it was less entertaining than Elimination Chamber. I think that's probably one of the best this year. And I would say it's been more entertaining than months of Raw and SmackDown, that's for sure. Though not as good as the NXT stuff, but quite good.
Yeah, and I'd lean towards that. I mean, there were some... My biggest problem was there weren't a lot of great matches. Like, as in...
There were better matches in Hell in a Cell than there were at whatever the... Night of Champions. Yeah.
I think so overall as well, but I'm just saying there wasn't a lot of... Part of that were the pairings too, which we'll get into. No. I'm not sure a lot of these guys work well with each other, and some of them we've seen fight each other a whole crap load of times already too, so
yeah.
I don't know.
I think the biggest shocker for me was Del Rio coming back fighting Cena. Like,
Del Rio was coming back, I just didn't think they'd give him the belt to keep warm until John comes back.
Yeah, I figured he would drop it to Ziggler was the big rumor, and I don't know if that would have worked either. I think with Del Rio, though, it's kind of absence makes the heart grow fonder, and I think that's happened with Cena, too, that if you're never away, how can we miss you? And Del Rio, I don't know, he's a good worker. I don't know that he has a lot of charisma. I mean, we'll see what he does in this current run, but in the past, I don't think he was all that hot or anything when he left. But having said that, like, listen to the ovation when he came back, and I think that's part of it. You know, whenever you leave for a while, whenever you come back, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a good reaction. And then, alternatively, if you never ever leave, the fans don't miss you. So,
well, one of the things about Del Rio is him coming back. Now they have a really strong Latin star on mic, because they don't have Rey Mysterio, though there's rumors he's coming back. Sin Cara and Kalisto, I don't think I've ever heard them speak.
You don't like Kevin Los Owens' Metadores. Fiery Latino character?
And then Los Metadores, they're burying right now.
Well, they're being repackaged.
Which kind of sucks, because I like them, but I guess I'd like to know what they're going to do as a repackaged tag team. I think but they're Del great Rio. Workers, too. But Del Rio, if he does anything right, he knows how to put on a show. I've seen him wrestle twice live, and that guy, he works just as hard as Cena. He puts his heart into it. So I'm glad that he's back.
I'm glad that he's back without his little cabana boy.
Oh, Richard something or other?
Oh my god, Ricardo whatever the hell. Oh my. You want to talk about being gimmicky? That's the one of the besides like Santino Marella, except worse.
Yeah, it's the hell of a lot worse. But they tried. Well, you know what? At least I didn't stick him with, like, say, Rosa Mendez or something. Although she left, thank Christ for that.
So, Del Rio versus Cena. I liked it. I thought it was really cool seeing their two styles.
Should be noted, we had Zeb Coulter come back, too, who hasn't been on TV in forever. And he did the introduction of Del Rio.
I think the last time he was on was before WrestleMania, wasn't he?
Jack,
I think so, yeah.
When he was still with Jack Swagger and Cesaro, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't seen him in quite some time, and he got a good reaction. I didn't know where they were going whenever he first came out. Obviously, it makes sense now, but...
Well, yeah, it makes sense now.
At the time,
Next America thing or whatever?
Yeah.
Sounds like a brand of salsa chips, but...
Also, it sounds like borderline that we're going to get into trouble at some point, so...
Yeah, I'm waiting for that.
Well, it's a good thing this show is tagged explicit.
I don't mean this show. I meant in general. I think the WWE is going to walk the line at some point with this.
Oh.
Remember, we did have Daivari for a while, so...
Oh.
Yeah, they'd like to forget about that.
But I'm glad Zeb's back, though. But I liked him a lot more with, like, Jack Swagger, though.
Well, it depends on who they have him end up feuding with, but we'll get to that in a bit. Anyway, this was a good match, by the way. This was one of the better ones.
It was one of the few times, and I'm not... We all know wrestling is staged for the most part, but these guys do have a lot of good athletics. And normally in matches like this, with any you put any other competitor in there with Cena, and usually it's Cena's athletics that show and not the other guys. I think both of them, their athletic prowess really showed in this match. And there were some amazing moments in this.
Yeah, I find Cena's got to be in there with somebody who's as good or maybe better than him, or else he tends to fall into the same trap, which is the five moves of doom over and over again. Del Rio gives him somebody he can do other stuff with. Same with Cesaro and Owens before this. But I think it helped him a lot. And it was interesting that Del Rio was still kind of in WWE shape. Like, when I say that, I mean, you know, if you watch NXT, there's a lot of veterans on that. James Storm, Samoa Joe, Asuka, and a whole ton of other people who have wrestled everywhere worldwide, but very different styles. Like, there's a certain way you wrestle in the WWE, and Del Rio just jumped in and had a really good match off the bat. And I mean, credit to Cena for helping him as well, but I mean, credit to him for being able to just go straight back to that instead of what he was doing. Like, he was in the indies and Lucha Underground and everything else, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other thoughts on this match, Mike?
Like I said, I was entertained throughout. I'm really glad now that we've got an awesome top kind of Latin star back in there. So, good work, WWE. This was a hell of a way to bring him back, and I'm glad.
I'll say this before we get a little further, too, that I don't have anything against Cena, but him being gone for a while, you'd think is a really good time for them to develop some new stars and that kind of thing. And then, of course, the ceiling kind of crashed down on WWE a couple weeks ago. And now they have to develop people, like, as soon as possible. And they have
talk about that.
Yeah, but I mean...
Yeah,
Cena leaving would normally be kind of a good thing in a way, at least for somebody on the roster. Now I'm not as sure, because everything's going to get rushed big time.
Yeah, it's kind of like when they had to... Like certain WrestleMania, certain WrestleManias in the past, I remember they had to rush to change something, to fix something, or to move something around and stuff. But I mean, it's WWE. They're always, I mean, the gears in that machine are moving faster than,
they do it on the fly, but they obviously plan some stuff. Like Reigns has kind of become a slow burn. I think. Owens is destined to be the top heel, but that's a very slow burn, which I think is the right thing to do, but I don't know what they're going to do now. Anyway.
Speaking of Reigns versus Wyatt. It wasn't bad. While I'm still a Reigns fan, I actually love seeing Bray work inside the cell, because he has to actually, and don't get me wrong, the guy has some moves, and he can move, but
usually he ends up relying on his lackeys to do all the work for him. And this is why I liked him in Hell in a Cell here, because he actually has to do all the work himself.
Yeah, I feel a bit of the same way I did about Rollins when we talked about it last time, that Wyatt's kind of weak, or he seems weak because he always needs somebody else to do stuff. And I don't think that's the best way to build a stable. I mean, I hate to say it, but his group reminds me a lot of the Flock. But at least with the Flock, everybody else lost every match. But man, you could count on Raven to win. And this is kind of the opposite, that Wyatt's the guy that seems to lose every match. Strowman wins every single time he goes out. But
it's because Strowman, all he has to do is just stick his foot out. I mean,
yeah, but I don't think that's a great way. Like, you end up wondering, why would people follow this guy? Because apparently he's a wuss bag who can't win a match. And you're out there and you win every match you're in. Why would you go, gee, he should be champ? Well, no, you'd probably go, I should be champ. I don't know. I like Bray. I think Bray has been the character that suffered the most with the 3-hour Raw. Because I swear, they go out there and they give Bray a mic and say, yeah, by the way, we got 15 extra minutes to fill. Just ramble on for 15 minutes. Like, it's not his fault.
At least
fault
he's good at like, say, improv-ing. The problem is he doesn't have a lot of material to work with
now. And it's not his fault that he's got to fill up the space. I don't know many guys who you could hand a mic to and say, go for an extra like 10 minutes and be in character. There's very few. I don't think it's his fault that his promos go on too long or that he rambles. It's just, man, like, how, I don't even know if Heyman could stand there and do that. And he's really good. I mean, he might be one of the best people on the mic in history. You know, but
see, but the difference between Heyman and Wyatt is Heyman is that guy who, Heyman's that annoying guy that's going to get in your face and get loud and do this, and where Bray's more of like really quiet, reserved kind of, you know, that's the difference between the two of them. So comparing them is interesting. There really is no comparison.
I hate to do this analogy again then, but I mean, really, I think Wyatt works best as Raven doing a short speech or a vignette, and that's all he says. And that's it. He sits down in the corner, or he, you know, does. Well, Bray actually sits in the corner too. That's a weird, man. Maybe these two are pretty much the same. Anyway, but I mean, this, you know, just don't have him ramble on. Just let him say what he has to say, which is usually going to be weird and confusing, and then that's it. Yeah. But don't hand him a mic and say, hey, just, you know, fill 10 minutes with weird, wacky you.
I think if they would treat Bray, and this is probably going to,
the listeners are probably going to, direction to go in.
Well,
not just jump around from feud to feud for no reason.
Right. They need to give him a purpose. They need to give the characters something to go on, not just, hey, that, you know, this is the feud of the week kind of thing, but also, and I know a lot of people are going to throw their iDevices and MP3 players and whatever else out their car windows when I say this, make Bray Wyatt a, not better, he could never be better than what I'm going to compare him to, but make him more quiet. Make him like the Undertaker. Because if the Undertaker did as many promos as Bray does, the Undertaker would not have as much following. You know, the Undertaker comes out and he says, at most, in most instances, he says 5 words or less, and he gets the point across.
But the thing is, with Wyatt, he is that cult of personality.
Which is why I use the Raven analogy, because that's exactly what he was in WCW. I'm not going like WWE. Version.
Nice
ECW.
CM Punk reference, Mike.
Yeah, CM Punk did that to a little bit too. I mean, and he's another guy that's good on the mic. But anyway, I mean, when we're talking about the match, this was a good match. I enjoyed
it. This was a damn good match.
You know, when we're talking about the Wyatt's character not necessarily having direction too, by the way, did we ever get a really good reason why he went after Reigns? I mean,
no.
It was just kind of like, I don't like you, so let's feud.
He had his kid or something, didn't he, or something weird like
that?
That was
well after that he started threatening his daughter or referencing her, et cetera, et cetera. But at least now they've kind of given him a feud with some purpose that makes sense. Obviously, we're not talking about that now. I'm just saying that they seem to have given him some direction, and I think maybe part of that is the injury to Rollins as well. It's a side effect of that, that mm-hmm. they've shifted that around. So maybe Wyatt's the guy I mentioned that what's happened benefits, but yeah, we'll see. But yeah, this was an enjoyable match. This was one of the better between these two, and we've seen these guys meet a lot lately. So
my favorite part of the match was the Sister Abigail into the roll-up, into the Superman punch. And I know everyone hates the Superman punch. It's just a flying thrown punch, but it just looks awesome when he does
it. If he does it well out of nowhere, it works. Like when he reversed...
Thank you, Michael Cole.
When he reversed the pop-up powerbomb, that was a good way to deliver it that didn't feel forced or anything. If it's mm-hmm. this long setup, you know, why the hell would you not avoid it? It would be really easy. Yeah. But if he does it, like, quickly, and yeah, don't call me Michael Cole again, damn it.
Hey, you're the one that quoted
Vintage
him.
Vintage Orton.
Oh, boy. Any other thoughts on Reigns versus Wyatt, Mike?
I like how it wasn't the same slow plotting match we've seen for months. There's a lot of energy in this. There was a lot of felt like they knew their spots, but where they could improve, they did. And it looked brutal, but it looked like both of them were really out there. They really wanted to perform, and I really think we got one of the better matches out of them in a long time.
Absolutely. Next up is the tag team match, the Boudet versus the Dudley Boys. So let me ask you guys, when do you think they're going to give the Dudleys the 10-year thing?
It's going to be a while. I expect like New Day's going to hold it for a bit. Just because they're really hot right now. I know you don't
hold
like
it
them, but obviously
after Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I don't.
Really, that long?
I think so.
That could
They're so hot right now.
They are. And I mean, you know, the fact that they've been putting singles guys in feuds with them, at least miniature sort of quick feuds, is a sign of that, too. I think it just this wasn't the right time to put the belt on the Dudleys yet and kind of nix that momentum a little. I think they need to ride this out a bit. It's nothing against the Dudleys or anything, obviously. I'm just I don't think now is when you kill them their momentum, though. I think you wait at least a little bit longer, and then I don't know, maybe later on you let them reinvent themselves or change themselves a little. It was a little weird, by the way, having them on a pay-per-view without Xavier Woods.
It was actually refreshing for once, because it brought them back to the two tag team champions, not the tag team champions and their mouthpiece.
It's
but
true.
Xavier is what makes them so entertaining, though.
It's a part of it. I think this match suffered a bit from not having him around. I'm not saying it was a bad match. It's from a storyline standpoint, it was a little off. And then to have the Dudleys lose... Not quite clean, obviously, but, you know, they had the trombone hit at the end. But, I mean, to still kind of lose and end up pinned without any help from a third guy or something, I don't know if that diminishes them a little, or I'm not sure.
I don't think so. I just think that it's not their time just yet. They are going to get that 10
years. Oh, yeah, they'll get it at some point.
You know, they'll get it. I think you're right, though, and as much as I hate to admit it, Woods was probably needed in this match, even though wasn't he injured or something?
Yeah, I can't remember why.
I don't know. He was out. He was injured.
It was something real life. Yeah, the storyline was that he was injured. But let's be honest, if you're a pro wrestler, you can probably stand at ringside.
Yeah.
These guys wrestle with a lot more pain, much less stand around outside the ring and play a trombone.
Yeah, I mean, JBL does it every week. Oops, sorry.
You'd be in paint, too, if you sat beside Cole.
The reason why I say that Woods was almost needed in this match is because the moment when Kofi tried to pull one on over the ref, I'm like, Kofi, come on, that's not going to work. Like, you got to be kidding me.
I like that they tried, though. That was kind of nice and funny.
Yeah, they did try. Mike, any other thoughts on the tag match?
Honestly, this is the first time I've really seen the Dudley Boys where I've actually really cared. I thought they put on a fantastic match. Like I was saying previously, I think this match suffered from not having Xavier around, which is funny because I remember a year ago people were saying Xavier Woods, who the fuck is that? And now he's ridiculously popular. So once again, good on WWE for making what could have been an average match fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Nikki versus Charlotte for the Divas Championship.
Let me just note, anyone who watches this knows I dislike Nikki significantly, and I love the NXT Divas and the other Divas that can actually wrestle, like Natalya and Paige, although Paige is from NXT as well, whatever. Anyway, having said all that, Nikki actually looked better than she has in a while with this. I mean, the Alabama Slam on the apron is something that's been replayed a few times because it was really nice. Mm. Like, that surprised me. This still wasn't a great match. I still don't think she's a great worker. She's not even in the same sentence or realm as Sasha Banks, but it was not bad for her, at least. And I mean, this is probably the last we're going to see of her in the Divas title. God, just call it the Women's Championship again. Anyway, this is probably the last we're going to see of her in that picture, because I think the main ones are going to feud for a while. WWE is making a colossal mistake not putting Sasha Banks up there. I mean, people are chanting for her every single Raw, and she's never on the card. She's wrestling on, like, main event. So they're making a mistake
there.
There's
no friggin' sense.
No.
Why do they even... Okay, so at the top tier of WWE on television, you have Raw and SmackDown. Then you have Main Event. Then you have NXT.
And Superstar.
NXT is... Well, okay. Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, Superstars, NXT. But here's my thing. NXT is their, as we all know, their developmental division. What the fuck is the deal with Main Event and Superstars? They're like...
They're where they jam the people they can't find time for on Raw and SmackDown. I mean, realistically, that's all it is. But, I mean, the fact that they can't find a storyline for Banks is a huge mistake. And if anything, then, you know, let her do double time and have her continue the feud with Bayley on NXT, which is ridiculously good. And that's going to be the other problem for Nikki and why I say she's gone, is that at some point Bayley's coming up too, and she's way better than the Bellas or any of the existing pre-NXT Divas, with the exception, again, maybe being Natalya. Nikki sells shirts. That's fine, and she can try to keep in there, but I mean... Really, I said it before, the WWE is making a mistake not listening to these constant chants and signs for Banks.
Well,
they're going to have the same problem with Bayley as well, too. I mean, these are phenomenally talented people who are already over.
Well, Banks yesterday, as of this recording, posted something. It was either on her Tumblr or her Twitter. She was retweeting a fan. The fan had said, "The fans will cry out, 'We want Sasha,' and Vince will look down and whisper, 'No.'" And that's, you're right, because like, she should be involved a lot more than what she is. And she's a much better athlete than friggin' Nikki is.
She's, I'd say, probably even not arguably. I would just flat out say, I think she's the most popular diva right now. And I mentioned this on the last podcast I did with Mike. In terms of her work and her wrestling ability, she's on another plane than everybody else. And I include Cesaro, E3, and Owens, and everybody else who's been wrestling really well in that group. Like, she's really good, like, insanely skilled. So, yeah, just that, I think, would get her over the same way Brian eventually did. But then she can speak really well. Like, she's got a character that works well for her and people identify with. So, yeah, I mean, the fans are chanting for her because they actually want to see her. And for whatever reason, they're denying that. And
before they started the WWE Divas Revolution, before they brought in Sasha and Charlotte and all that, I was like, just put Ronda Rousey in there and have her clean house, please. Come on.
I don't think the WWE can afford her salary. Next year we'll get something with Ronda. I hope so.
Only if her current boss says it's okay. But anyway, back to this.
Dana White or something?
Yes. back to this, anyway. This wasn't a bad match. It wasn't great or anything. And Charlotte was one of the... Charlotte mercifully retains, and Nikki leaves TV for a while. Hooray.
I don't know. I thought, out of all the Divas matches I've seen leading up to Hell in a Cell, I thought this was the best one that they've had.
Yeah.
Out of all the matches on the Raws and the just like...
Well, they were given time, too. They're still not given enough time on the Raws and that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's still not NXT. Like, watch any of Asuka's matches. Oh, yeah, she's another one I need to include in that, who's eventually coming to the roster and going to wipe out some more of the not-great ones.
So then we have Rollins versus the Demon Kane. Thankfully, this storyline kind of died off, because this whole storyline was... Demon Kane, Corporate Kane, multiple personalities. It's like, hey, Michael Keaton, come back and play Multiplicity again.
I thought it could have been more interesting if Kane had either played it one of two ways. If he played it off flat out that he was rubbing everyone's face in it, that he knew and he was well aware that he was both and he was doing it, but he was just playing dumb. Or if B, he actually just played really dumb. If he had just been blatant and stupid about it, that could have been entertaining from a comedic standpoint. But instead, they were in the middle, and he just kind of hinted at it, and there was kind of silly stuff, but not all the way. And it was just, because of that, it just felt uneven, and it wasn't interesting. I mean, nobody believed Kane was going to win the title, right?
No.
No, and I mean yeah, so...
Like I've mentioned before, while I'm not a fan of Rollins' character or his attitude, his ability to work in and out of the ring is pretty amazing. I will give him that. And why would you even give Kane the championship at this point? I mean, as we've already established, Rollins was, or at this time is, on this massive run. I still wanted Kane to tombstone him at the end, though.
Eh, I was okay with this. I was surprised they let Rollins flat out win clean. Especially after I mentioned it on the last podcast, he went 1-18. We had listener feedback from that. And by the way, I would disagree, but he's not wrong. Like, the feeling's going to be different for everyone. It's just, in my opinion, right, they were making him too beatable versus, I agree, having a beatable champ is fine, but having him win 1-18 is a little too beatable to me. And I feel like they're on their way back to rebuilding him with letting him win clean over evil Demon Kane. But
yeah,
obviously we won't know, you know, what would have happened if it continued on. Was he going to beat Reigns, etc., etc.? Still, this was... I don't know. This wasn't a great match, actually. It just, I never thought Kane was going to win, obviously. So, I mean, what the...
I remember going to the bathroom for this match thinking, well, I know what's going to happen here.
I felt bad for the powerbomb spot, by the way. That looked painful. I mean, he just bounced off the table. It didn't even break or anything.
Yeah. Like, ow.
Poor Kane. He's been through enough already over the years.
Yeah. So then we had the Intercontinental title, Ryback versus Owens.
Which should have been better. Everybody knows I'm a huge Owens fan, but man, these two guys don't work all that well together. I don't know what it is.
Ryback seems to work better when he can do raw strength, whereas Owens, if you give him a chance to be athletic, like if you put him in with Cena, they're bouncing around doing all sorts of crazy shit together with
Owens
him and Ryback.
Owens is both. Yeah, Owens is both. Like, on his core, he's a brawler. And I think, for whatever reason, Ryback doesn't work well with the brawlers. Maybe because that's at his heart what he is. I don't know, but it just, this match didn't click. And I think most of their matches didn't click all that well. I'm not sure this was a great feud or anything. Obviously, I mean, it props up Owens a little more. I don't know what it does for Ryback. I mean, he had the Intercontinental belt for what? A month or two? 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I thought it was a month or two or something at least. Because, like, yeah, he had the three-way against Miz and Sho where he defended and then he won it originally. I don't know. This was a weird kind of, like, mid-card thing and just, I don't know, on to bigger and better for both, I guess, because Owens is definitely going to get elevated with the absence of any decent heels. So
who do you guys think if Owens gets elevated into, well, he is, we'll talk about that later, but you know, into the WWE World Heavyweight Championship bracket, who do we think could really take on the Intercontinental Championship?
Oh,
well, I mean, it's virtually a belt of death. Owens seems to be the only one who seems to defy
Owens,
that.
Yeah, Owens is going to keep that belt. I'm going to guarantee to you right now that Ambrose turns heel and he's going to feud with Reigns.
Isn't he already heel?
No.
Ish.
Yeah, he's Ish, always yeah. been there. Like, he's, you know, the lunatic, blah, blah, blah. But he hasn't flat out been bad. And he's always been buddies with Reigns. So I think I think they just flat out turn him. I'd bet on that. So I think Owens ends up holding on the Intercontinental belt. And they try to kind of bring some more prestige to it and raise it up the way the U.S. title was when it was around Cena's waist.
Or, yeah. Or if they, you know, if they decide to switch him out, you could have Alberto on the Intercontinental belt, and he could do some really cool things with that, but whatever works, I guess. So the grand all, be all, bloodiest battle in hell took place with Taker versus Lesnar. This is going to be the coolest lead-up I've ever seen to a match like this, where they had, you know, we've already talked about the brawls that they had on Raw and SmackDown and whatever else, and this match was awesome. I thought this was great.
Yeah, this was surprisingly brutal and very bloody.
It was really fun. I'd say it was the best of their three.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the WrestleMania one, let's just take that out because it was not good. Let's be honest. A lot of that was injury. I mean, that's not their fault.
Yeah.
The second one was good, but I don't know. Some of the exaggerated facial expressions and the acting kind of hurt it a little. I feel like they toned down the acting in this and they just went at it. Like, they just fought and they toned down acting. And I mean, part of it too was Lesnar kind of helped the reality of it by shoving the doctor, which we now know he wasn't supposed to do and was a no-no.
But it's kind of like him flipping the announce table and injuring
Michael
Cole and all
of
them.
It felt a little more real though because of it. So
yeah, I think that had to have been probably the best choke slam in 25 years.
Yeah, it's been a while since he's been since he's done a really good one. That's a good point.
I mean, that, like, I wasn't even sure where or what he. What he was going to be able to do with Lesnar, but damn, I was left speechless when I saw that moment. I was like, wow.
Tearing up the ring, too, was something interesting. Like, I didn't expect that.
That's something you'll never, ever see.
Yeah.
Unless it's guys like this. Unless it's a feud like this.
And to be fair, they still have maybe, I would say, I hate so much that they tried to repeat it, by the way. But, I mean, Lesnar has one of the all-time great ring moments with the Big Show when the ring collapsed the first time they did that. Yeah. It still bugs me that they copied it because that just kind of made it lame. But that first time, I still remember seeing that. I was actually watching it live, oddly enough, at that time and just... I just remember thinking, like, holy shit, like, I've never seen that before. And it's kind of neat that, for whatever reason, Lesnar seems to be pretty good at coming up with, I don't know if it's just him or what, but, I mean, coming up with different ways to kind of use or the ring or change people's perception of the ring, that kind of thing.
Yep, absolutely. Mike, your thoughts?
This was fucking awesome. like legit, like we said, this is the best of their three matches.
It was the best match on this card too. Without a doubt.
Like, it was brutal. It was visceral, and just like, it just seemed like, literally, it seemed to me like these guys were about to kill each other, and then the ending happened. Let's talk about that. The only thing that killed this match for me was the stupid inclusion of bringing the Wyatts into it.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was curious what you meant about that. Yeah, well.
Like, it looked like, if that had been the end of the Brock Undertaker thing, I would have been fine with it. Mm-hmm. But then, we're going to drag the Undertaker. I'm like, nah, man, come on. Like, I can't remember who said it, but it was something like, you go out on top, you go out on your back. And I'm thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, please not this.
Well, we now,
let's see here.
We now know, I mean, he's not necessarily going out. I mean, he's still constantly on Raw. But yeah, they have this weird retirement feel up until the moment the Wyatts came out. I don't know if they should have basked in that or what. Like, we now know a couple things. I mean, first of all, Undertaker came back immediately. Second of all, if he hadn't come back, we now know he probably would have been dragged back anyway because there's a void filled with Rollins' injury. Mm-hmm. I don't know then if there's part of me that wanted him to bask in the retirement angle of it or, you know, pretend like, gee, maybe this was my last match and then have him come back for WrestleMania. But we now know that wouldn't have happened anyway. So I'm not sure how much it diminishes it. Obviously, at the time, like if you had asked me a week and a half ago, I would have said, yeah, this was stupid and it really hurt The Undertaker and kind of hurts his character a little. But now I feel like they would have done it anyway.
Well, they would have done it anyway because wasn't it earlier in this pay-per-view when they had the ad for Survivor Series, 25 years of The Undertaker? You know, they had that ad in the pay-per-view before this match.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but it certainly could have
sworn they did. But I'm saying it's like, it's one of those things where I'm actually, you know, we've been saying, give the Wyatts something better. Give them something that will sustain their characters.
Oh, no, the Undertaker, lightning and flames, evidently.
Well, The Undertaker and Kane will, that storyline with them versus the Wyatts, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah,
that's,
I like what's,
that's probably the first time I've ever even been interested in the Wyatts.
I like what's happening with them. I just don't know if this is how I would have started it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of my thing, too. I just wish,
but
it, I just kind of wish like it had been given something a little bit more, I guess.
Okay.
But I don't know how I would have done it, truthfully.
Well, let me ask you guys this. If, okay, doing it the way they did it, the way I see it is, the Wyatts always have to get the one up first when they're on the attack or whatever, or when they're trying to change a storyline or whatever. And changing it from being Taker versus Lesnar to being it Taker, and then, you know, we'll talk about Kane later, versus the Wyatts. See, I thought, okay, the Wyatts strike first. They have this really, really weird funeral thing. And then, lo and behold, the next night or whenever it was, The Undertaker comes back and basically kicks their teeth in. So that's the way I saw it. It was, it's a build-up to get The Undertaker almost back on TV. Now, is he going to be on TV a lot? Probably not. Like I said, they're leading up to Survivor Series, and who knows what they're going to do with WrestleMania next year. I haven't looked at any information.
That's the other issue, too. If this runs to WrestleMania, will he end up putting over Bray Wyatt in an attempt for them to build him? Like, if this goes on that long and goes on successfully, I don't know where this goes for everybody.
Well, I just want this to be better than the last time.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think that'll take much, though. I mean, Bray's, you know, not trying to make a joke here, but I mean, Bray's injury kind of crippled that as well. Like, that could have been a special.
Or something, right?
Yeah, that was his ankle. And I mean, that could have been a special match. And that, and let's be honest, The Undertaker went into that not at 100% either. That's the one that he kind of looked old for really the first time. And then when he came back for Lesnar, he still looked a little bit, but he looked a lot more energized than before. And then recently, he just seems much, much younger than... Maybe he's been doing DDP yoga, I don't know. But he's looked better lately than he has in quite some time. You mentioned the choke slam.
Well,
I mean,
yeah. Oh, God. There have been times where I've seen him in recent pay-per-views, and we've talked about this. I can't wait to see if he does another tombstone again, because some of the tombstones he's done in the past few pay-per-views that he's been on just don't look right. And some of the choke slams look like that he's grabbing the person at the wrong angle. Like, you know, we see the straight on grab by the throat with his hand, but like either the camera angle changes or something. And then it looks to me that the person, whoever it is, whether it's Brock, whether it's whomever, looks like they land wrong. But this choke slam at the end of this match was perfect. It was like Undertaker of 25 years ago.
It feels like either he's being more careful or they are, because, I mean, the tombstones you mentioned, yeah, you're dead on. He's holding them way higher than he ever used to. Like, the head's not even remotely close to his knees anymore. And it shows, like, if you pay attention, that kind of thing. And, you know, maybe that, let's be honest, he's not a young man. Maybe he doesn't have the confidence that he did, that he's not going to drop them or something won't happen. Right. You know, he certainly, I think the last thing Mark Calloway wants is to injure somebody who's up and coming in the, you know, when he's nearing the end of his career. I think he's a good guy. So, I mean,
how far do we think they're going to take that? How far? Okay. On two fronts, how far do we think The Undertaker wants his career to go, and how far do we think WWE will allow it to go?
I'm heartbroken that Sting didn't get his moment, because probably because of the injury. I would love it if he got his moment in a WrestleMania match with The Undertaker. I don't know if
there's
that's going to happen.
There's still hope.
How are they going to give Undertaker or Sting? Well, how are they going to give Undertaker the belt? That's the thing.
No, I don't know that he gets the belt. I mean, I think for him, even fighting the Undertaker period would be enough of a moment, especially at a WrestleMania. Like, that would be a big deal, even if he loses. And that way they would let the Undertaker go out on top. Sting gets to do something he probably always dreamed of or really wanted to do, even when he was in WCW, even though he's a loyal guy. And, it doesn't really hurt either of them. They both get to kind of ride off. To me, that's almost the optimum thing. But then, I have to ask, what do they do with Bray? Like, I hate to say it, but having him lose to The Undertaker and kind of burying him again doesn't do him any good. I'm sure they can pitch something, or maybe Kane helps out enough, or we have some other surprise. I'm sure they can come up with something that he doesn't just flat out lose again. But if he loses two feuds in a row to the same guy, that's kind of lame.
Yeah, kind of is.
But I also don't want to see him bury The Undertaker either, so.
Well, see, like, do you think that The Undertaker essentially is a legacy character. He's essentially, you know, I don't ever think, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, especially Ryan, since between the three of us, Ryan knows the most about all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen him ever give an interview. Like an actual, like a Stone Cold podcast, like an interview with Michael Cole. Like, I don't ever, they never say his real name. Obviously, they're not supposed to, because it's a character, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I didn't know his real name until I looked it up online. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. And you made the comment earlier about yoga, and I'm thinking, well, with that wife of his, maybe so.
No comment. But,
yeah. What I'm wondering is because he is such a legacy character, do you think that they would let him just go out on a whimper? I don't think so
either, but I also have to wonder, how panicked are they? I mean, they just had their champion leave with injury. Are they going to... It's happened before. I don't think Vince would panic. I mean, he's a smart guy and kind of has control. But if somebody botches something, or what happens if they get one more injury? You know, what happens if Reigns dislocates his shoulder and has to take 3 weeks off or something? They could totally foul this up and suddenly decide, well, you know, we need Bray or somebody to look really strong now. Or I doubt it, too. I would be amazed. And I also don't know if one loss would screw up, you know, decades of The Undertaker either. I think maybe it did for
the entire world already. I mean, Brock saw to that.
Yeah, but they've never made Brock look anything but unstoppable since. So at least there was a reason for that. And I think the trio of matches helped too. Like, The Undertaker may have lost two of three, but he really didn't. We didn't come away thinking he's diminished or anything in the end. Did a great job of scripting that, and give both guys credit too. I mean, Brock and The Undertaker did a great job of making themselves look good in it as well.
Absolutely. That whole rumble on Raw, no pun intended, but the whole rumble on Raw where Brock's like, I'm gonna kill you, you're gonna have to, it's like, you, like we were saying earlier in this episode, you don't ever really hear Brock talk, because obviously Paul Heyman is very good mouthpiece. And then Undertaker, as I've already said, whenever he does talk, it's six or five words or less. Like, he just gets to the point. And with Undertaker and his character, how he gets, like, how he puts his point across is with those deadbeat eyes. And just the way that he can give the camera a certain look, and you just know, oh my god, this guy means business. You better back the fuck up. So you mentioned earlier that WWE is kind of having to scramble because Seth Rollins, the future of the WWE, got injured on a non-televised event in Ireland. What he did, according to Jonathan Coachman, WWE champion Seth Rollins suffered ACL, MCL, and medial meniscus tears. He's going to be out 6 to 9 months. So what do we think they're going to do with...
I already kind of hinted. I think they give... Reigns is going to end up with the belt, and he's going to feud with Ambrose. I would put money on that. I don't know if that's the best thing to do, but I also don't know what else I would do. I mean, I know you don't like Rollins, but man, you have to give him credit. He's done a really good job as champ, though. I mean, he's done everything they've asked of him. Like, he's an excellent worker. Yeah. He's great on the mic. He's very good when he makes appearances in other places as well, too. It's so weird, by the way, hearing him as an actual person, like doing interviews, not as the character Seth Rollins, because I mean, he's actually a really nice and really intelligent guy. So I think that's another reason why I like him so much, too, admittedly. But I mean,
like I've said this episode and last podcast, it's more so for me, the character, like CM Punk, the person. I've listened to interviews with him. I love that guy. Every now and then I didn't like his character, but overall I liked his character. But the same thing with Seth Rollins. I don't care for his character, but I'm sure he's a really nice guy.
Yeah, and no matter what, too, I mean, flat out, he leaves a void. No matter, like, yeah, even if he wasn't the champ, it would be tough to fill shoes of somebody who, he's not a Bray Wyatt. You can give him the mic and say, go for 10 minutes, and he can kind of put it together one way or another. It may not be amazing, but he'll do a more than adequate job. I mean, I hate to say it, like, of all the Shield guys, Reigns still seems the most raw overall. For whatever reason, Rollins just completely jumped everybody, because for a while it seemed like he was the one that needed the most work. And Ambrose is somewhere in between the two of them, I think, and Reigns is getting there. The biggest issue with Reigns is he has a tendency to flub stuff on the mic still. And unlike Rollins and Ambrose, he hasn't figured out how to cover it up. He actually tends to draw more attention to it when he does it. Yeah. Which,
I think another problem with, like, Reigns is he's not as good in the ring when it comes to improvising. With, like, Ambrose, he knows how to, like, okay, I'll adapt. With Rollins, oh, for sure.
Yeah, for whatever reason, it seems like Reigns is still on the cusp of figuring it all out and putting it all together, and I think he will at some point. Man, this would be another show all about guys who I think are close. You know, Cesaro's another one I've mentioned, that Cesaro's just missing that something. With Reigns, I don't think it's that it's missing, it's that there's something
that hasn't developed yet.
Yeah, I don't know that he has the confidence in himself yet, and I think he'll find it. He's more than talented enough. He's got the look, talent, and work ethic and everything else. It's just a matter of when he puts that all together, and he'll do it. And I guess they're going to hope that he does it quickly. I mean, putting him in a feud with Ambrose is at least somebody he can work with really well, and they know each other, so...
See, I like it better when they're together as a team and they're kicking ass.
I understand why
they would do a feud between the two of them. But let's talk about it briefly. So, well, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on Rollins and all the scrambling that they're going to have to do now?
I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with him, whether they do put him into the belt, which I don't think it's a good idea. Not right now, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the other option? That's the problem. It's too early for Owens. I love
him. It's way too early for Owens.
I love him.
It might not be a bad choice. But for some reason, he keeps getting pushed down because, like, he's a really good worker, too. He damn well performs. But they write his character like a fucking
garbage.
Idiot.
Garbage. Yeah.
And it sucks, though, because for a while, like earlier this year, I thought he was doing really, really, really well. Then he all was. Of a sudden, he gets this fucking Bon Jovi poison rejected look to him, and randomly Lana shows up, and now I think they screwed him up. Yeah, I think he had really good momentum there for
that,
a while.
That feud screwed everybody up, though. Like, Rusev was one of the top heels. Like, remember WrestleMania when he came out with the tank against Cena? That was great. Like, that was an amazing WrestleMania moment, and the crowd went nuts. And they completely botched that. One of the other ones I feel like we should mention too, who seems to have fallen out of favor, and that's Sheamus. He won Money in the Bank and is done.
Yeah, he's a jobber now.
He does nothing. Mid card at best.
I've seen him on Raw the last couple of weeks because I watch Raw the next day on Hulu Plus. But I've seen him on Raw the last couple of weeks. There's no men, like, I don't even hear Cole mention the fact that he has Money in the Bank. Did they forget about that?
He still carries it, but he's always in tag matches, so what's it matter?
Like, another person they screwed up when they brought back King of the Ring. They fucked up Bad News Barrett. This King Barrett gimmick is stupid.
Yeah. And it's
England, if you listen to that crowd, nobody gave a fuck.
Barrett
was so quiet.
Barrett, they flat out botched, and I don't know. I hope he recovers. Sheamus, it doesn't feel like it. I don't know. What is it with Sheamus? Like, he doesn't seem to be reaching the audience either.
I don't think Sheamus cares.
Well, with Barrett, I think it's because they screwed his character. But with Sheamus, I don't know what the issue is. He kept winning over Orton, who, you know, whatever you think of Orton at this point in his career, is still a top guy. But now Sheamus is just nothing. Like, he's a step away from being the main event guy. As in, when I say main event guy, as in on Saturday night show. Main event. I don't know a lot of things. I don't know what happened. I don't know how they redeem or redo him. And I don't know what they do with him at all, period. Like, how do you reconcile the Money in the Bank thing? Like, there's no way you put the belt on this guy. He has no heat at all. No one cares. Wait.
Was there ever a time in the WWE, WWF history where someone got Money in the Bank
and didn't win it?
Won Money in the Bank, won the championship, and then the very next night on Raw lost the championship to somebody else?
Yes.
That's what they probably should do with him. Because
but it hurts the title to have it change hands three times in a night, though.
No.
Especially after Rollins held it forever.
Yeah. The only other thing I can think of is pair him with Becky Lynch and find some other male-female tag team to...
Fandango and Summer Rae again!
No.
That would be awesome, actually. I don't know.
He's somebody that should be in. We should be talking about, as that. But now he's not there, so I don't know.
That sucks because I really used to like Sheamus, and now you know what? It's since they repackaged him after he came back from being hurt. He has sucked ever since.
Yeah, he looks bad. He doesn't look good in the ring either. Like, for whatever reason, he seems to have lost the viciousness. Maybe part of that, too, is there's other brawlers now, and Owens is 100 times better than he is, much as I hate to say it. I mean, maybe that's a part of it, but he's not good on his own either.
I don't know. Like, when you had Sheamus feuding with Christian, what was it, last year or the year before last? He looked really good, and I really liked him, but since he's come back, because I know he, like, tore his shoulder or something.
He's had good feuds. I mean, his original feud way back when was Cena, where he surprisingly won. I thought that was pretty well done, actually, a good way to kind of build him up quickly. And I don't feel like he's ever caught that ever again, or he hasn't been at that level. And just they never seem to know what to do with the guy, and part of it is him. Like, unlike somebody like Reigns, where I can say, I have a feeling, you know, I know he's going to get it. You watch him, and there's not going to be an issue, et cetera, et cetera. With Sheamus, I watch him, and I wonder where his career is going to be at in a few years.
Well, is he no... Okay, so with Sheamus, outside of any injuries he might have had this year, I thought one of the reasons why he had to step away at one point was because he was filming or doing voiceover for Rocksteady for Turtles. So if he's done with that, they need to let him grow his hair back and just be the badass he used to be.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if they're keeping him specifically like that for like kind of reshoots or something.
Yeah, possibly.
Or they're going to try to tie it into the movie, but how much does it help tying it into the movie if the guy is basically a jobber?
Well, I mean, he's not even, like, according to, and, you know, it's Wikipedia, people, take it with a grain of salt, but according to this, he's only on the voice actors and motion capture performers list. He's not on the live action actors list.
No, so he was, there was,
yeah, they had set photos with him there, I thought.
Yeah, because he was in, like, a diner talking with Bebop or somebody, so he'll probably get a few scenes, but... No Batista, so.
Hey, you leave the Bond villain alone.
I
would think he's more referring to Drax, who kind of like stole a good chunk of the movie as well. I don't know. I don't know what they're. I just wish I knew what they were doing with the guy, and I feel kind of bad for him. But on the other hand, like I watch him, I just don't feel like I see the effort.
Yeah, like I said, it's like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's like, well, here's a paycheck, here's a body slam.
And some of that, too, might be the fact that he comes in every day and there's no plan for him. I mean, we saw what kind of toll that took on Punk after a long time. Maybe that's a bit of it, too.
But at least Punk is good on the mic. Like, Sheamus,
he doesn't have the talents. He doesn't have the talent to overcome certain things, you're right.
Hence why I suggested putting him in a mixed tag team with Becky Lynch, because she's another one. Well, I love an Irish accent. I'm sorry, I don't understand anything that comes out of that chick's mouth. I just don't understand what the hell she's saying.
I have a lot of terrible comments I could make here, but I'm just going to skip all of them. With her, the main issue is they haven't had her on TV wrestling enough. Her thing is more of like an energy thing. It's a lot like Bayley that... They're not great on the mic, but you watch them and they tell a story through their matches. And by giving her these like shitty 5-minute spots or having her on, you know, mixed tag with 14 people, it doesn't help any. And I guess to a certain extent, maybe we should start saying that about Sheamus too. Remember when we talked about him last time, the Orton match with him in the other pay-per-view wasn't that bad. And that's the last time he's had any time to do anything. Like, since then, he's always in a tag match or some sort of, like, three-man match or whatever. He's never one-on-one, and he's never given chance to tell the story. Maybe that's the issue. Maybe he actually needs more time on television. And that goes back to the whole, I hate this 3-hour Raw thing, because somehow, somehow in 3 hours, they actually have less time to tell stories and wrestle than they ever did with two.
With the Undertaker, Kane, Wyatt family thing, cut the Wyatt family talk time and actually have them be actionable against Undertaker and Kane.
Yeah, no kidding. I'd love that too.
You know, I mean...
No, it's true. They should have cut the Wyatt family talk time like forever ago. It should just be a quick segment. That's what we've been harping on. But
it's all talking now.
Well, that's the problem. Somebody says, we have 10 minutes to fill. What should we do? Well, we could let these people tell a much better story and have an extra 5 minutes in their match. No, let's just rerun the same vignette and have Cole chat for an extra 2 minutes. Like,
I want to go back to Rusev because we were talking about guys that they've built up as unstoppable and then basically torn them down. Obviously, they can't tear Brock down.
Yeah.
I mean, Brock can have losses and stuff, but they're never going to be able to tear Brock Lesnar's character down. I don't think
Jordan losing to like Heath Slater or something.
Okay, well, I don't think they would ever do that. Heath Slater, who the hell is that? Is he still even around?
Yeah, he fought on Superstars like a week ago.
Again, Superstars, the lowest of the low of the WWE television series. But okay, so the thing with Rusev. They had him built up. They had him be unstoppable. He was undefeated for, what, a year or so? Yep. And then
he was the perfect heel for them. Yeah, well, that goes back to what we talked about last time, in that you fight Cena and you suddenly find yourself buried on the card for some reason. Again, not Cena's fault. I'm just saying that's
right.
One of the reasons I think people are mad at him. And just they fucking buried him, and then they put him in this stupid feud over a woman, which just did nothing for his character except make him look either like an imbecile or weak, like a combination of the two, and make him seem kind of whiny. It just
they took Rusev, who could have been one of the best guys at being unstoppable, unbeatable, week in and week out, like Cena used, you know, like Cena is week in and week out, not unbeatable, but you know, Cena's there every week. So they could have made they made him into that character. And then they tore it down and essentially made him a taller, fatter version of Santino Marella.
Yeah, I mean, he's a comedy guy. Really good. Like, he was, I would say, easily the number two heel in the company during that Cena feud.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just nothing after that.
Yep. Nope, they started doing that four-way, three-way, whatever the hell it was, you know, with Lana and Summer Rae and Ziggler and all that. And
they need to get rid of Summer Rae.
Yeah, she hasn't really offered much.
Like,
she's tossed around more than a Dollar General store whore.
Wow. You know what? I think she's pretty. She is an athlete, but she's not a wrestler.
No, and there's no, I hate to say it, but I mean, there's no room for her. I listed people in NXT who are going to be coming up and taking good roster spots away. I don't think there's a spot for her.
I mean, like, she brings nothing to the table. I mean, I'd rather see someone like, say, Emma come up.
Yeah.
But Emma doesn't make a good heel.
No.
I like
she's getting better.
Opposite but, Santino, yeah. But.
Yeah,
but still,
So the whole championship thing, outside of Reigns versus Ambrose, or Reigns getting it, and then they start a feud with him and Ambrose because Ambrose wants the belt too. What if they tried to build the Miz back up to be champion? He was an all right champion when he had it.
He's been buried for too long, though. I know.
The time to do that would have been at the height of Mizdow. But now gone.
That's completely true. Too, by the way, because when's Damian Sandow been on TV?
Yeah, once really. Again, I think he was on Superstars fighting Heath Slater.
Oh, shut up. What are you, some sort of repository of Heath Slater knowledge?
Apparently yes. So.
Fandango.
Oh, God. The thing about Miz is he has no more legends to go after. Like, he used to go after the legends all the time. Obviously, Roddy's not there anymore. Hulk has essentially been disavowed, obviously.
I think his character's middling right now, too, though. He seems to be in some sort of holding pattern, both character and personal-wise. Like, he's a guy that he needs to be motivated. And during the time when he became champion, that was the best he had ever worked. It seemed like he was just doing a great job with everything, and everything was kind of sticking. And ever since he left to film movies...
The Marine 3 and 4,
Most recently, he just seems listless.
And his little helper or something, didn't he?
Yeah, whatever it was. It seems like it's a little like Sheamus. He seems unmotivated, and nothing he does is all that interesting. And what I'm saying, like, nothing he does is all that interesting to him, much less the audience. Like, he just seems like he's kind of there.
Right. Absolutely. All right, do we have any thoughts or anything as to what Survivor Series is going to bring us in a couple of weeks?
A new champion.
Yep. Okay, besides the obvious, Ryan, thank you.
Well, it's got a lot to live up to, especially now that WWE has to scramble.
Well, everything's in
so
flux.
So many of the big guys are gone.
Yeah, for them, everything is in flux, too. I mean, we don't have a champion. Whatever feud Owens was going to have is going to be on hold. Really, the only feud we have that's been solidified is Undertaker Kane and the Wyatts. Other than that,
you
I
could
mean,
argue the Page, whatever.
Yeah, who cares? I mean,
yeah.
Listen, they for the love of God, just put Sasha on TV. Everybody's chanting for him. Every once in a while, yeah. it's going to turn into Daniel Bryan all over again if they're not careful. People are just going to lose their shit and boo Batista.
Oh, God.
Rumors they're going to bring back Bryan, but I hear that every pay-per-view, though.
Yeah, it might help if you were healthy.
It's going to... Yeah,
well, supposedly he's been cleared for months, but WWE doesn't want to pull the trigger.
Well, that's supposedly
you have to
too.
Wonder if they might do that now.
We don't know if that's true or not either. But
well, that's what he's been saying. Like he did like a press tour in India last weekend or something like that, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm good to go," but they haven't said yes yet.
Well, as much as I hate to say it, too, I mean, do you want to look at it from the WWE perspective? Do you want to trust a guy who has the potential to be on the shelf for a really long time instantly? I'm not trying to knock him. I love Daniel Bryan, but as much as I hate to say it, do you want to put a belt on a guy that you know could immediately end up out of action with one bad hit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I'd rather save that for a WrestleMania or Royal Rumble, not waste it on Survivor Series.
Yeah. I don't know who they're going to bring back at Survivor Series. I don't. What's after Survivor Series?
TLC.
TLC.
The one you can usually skip.
That's... Okay, well... Okay. With the return of the Dudleys, like, that's the time. Like, I know, Ryan, you keep saying that you want the New Day, and you think that the New Day should take it on until WrestleMania, but honestly, the point of the Dudleys is get the tables. So giving them their 10th win for the belt.
Yeah, TLC would,
tables, ladders,
TLC
and
would make sense.
Yeah.
A lot of friggin'
Their
sense.
Biggest problem is going to be they're going to want to do tables, ladders, and chairs matches, and oh yeah, right now nobody's fucking healthy in the company. So that's an issue. I mean, you know, Owens has done quite a few ladder matches. He can go, but I mean, how many more are there? Obviously, you got the Dudleys, who are some of the best ever at it, but I mean...
Yeah. You got Cesaro. Cesaro
That's
can
true,
do a ladder
yeah.
match.
Reigns, as much as I like him, I don't know if he's ready for a ladder match.
Ambrose
it felt like
he was
in a ladder match, wasn't he?
Didn't think he was a great. He didn't add like the ladder didn't add anything to that match. And I'd argue that Wyatt's part of this too, by the way, is the Wyatt character. But I mean, Wyatt added the weapons and stuff to Hell in a Cell more than it really did anything for Reigns. And that's not a knock on him. It's just, part of that's just
no,
the character.
No. Yeah, that's the character. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't know. I think overall Hell in a Cell was enjoyable. There are a couple of matches you can skip, but I mean that main event though. That main event was awesome.
Main event was worth watching, yeah. And that was another month where I feel like if you had the network, it was definitely worth it. You had the Lesnar podcast as well. And I'm absolutely loving Breaking Ground so far. If anyone's not watching that, they should. That is, they're following around NXT superstars and different ones. And you learn that Baron Corbin's kind of a dick to people.
Dick.
And that's and that's probably why he's been down there for years now and not been called up. But... Yeah. Whereas
is Breaking Ground kind of is it essentially the replacement for Tough Enough?
It's a better Tough Enough. Like Tough Enough annoyed me because it seemed very overproduced, and there have been parts of Breaking Ground that I feel that way. The bits with Dana Brooke running in the rain was silly because there's no way anybody would decide like I'm gonna run in this puddle and this is the exact spot I'm gonna stand. No, that was the camera guy going like, all right, this is a good place to do your workouts and it'll look cool. But stuff like that kind of sucks. But other things like watching, oh man, I feel bad for this, but watching ZZ get berated by the trainers, for example, is something that should have happened on Tough Enough.
Yeah,
I mean he's terrible and he seems listless.
And
is that the guy who wrestles gators?
Yes.
Yep.
Because they gave him a contract after Tough Enough, and so he's on Breaking Ground. But I mean, he is not doing well. It doesn't help, by the way. He's in the same training class as Asuka, who could basically tear out his heart with absolutely no effort, and I mean in real life, not wrestling. Like, she's a scary person in actual fights. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a good reason. And obviously the pay-per-views are always a good reason. Man, I'm starting to sound like Triple H and I'm shilling the network on these shows.
99,
that's all.
Yeah, I gotta stop that. I just really like it. It's terrific.
No, it's a great, great place because you can watch all of the you can watch all the old, like if
just
you,
this month they added another year of Raw.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can watch all the old pay-per-views from not just WWE but WCW and ECW. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's just amazing to see that. Like I said before, I wish the Stone Cold podcast that happens, like the, I know he has his regular podcast, but I wish the actual special guest stuff would happen a little bit more. But no, I mean, overall, Hell in a Cell was awesome. Let's see. Yeah, so next we got Survivor Series. So you guys might actually get two podcasts in 1 month for this episode, for this series.
I plan to watch it, so.
Oh, yeah, I'll be in there.
Well, that's another beauty of the network. If I watch it, I can turn on the network a couple hours later and watch it if I miss it. So.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Any parting thoughts, Mike?
I'm glad the pay-per-views have gotten better because since Elimination Chamber, they've been mostly shit.
I just wish Raw was better.
Yeah, same here. I wish I cared about Raw and SmackDown. Ryan texts me every Monday night.
Yeah, I was going to say, you absolutely love my amazing live texting of Raw, and everybody else does. You're not the only person I send those out to, by the way. I send them as...
That will get me to watch Raw if
you... I send them as a mass text. Yeah, but it's hard, because like it's 3 hours, and even I like start losing interest and get bored or half asleep.
I know, but you need to start doing that for Twitter, too.
I should, but I tend to curse a lot.
Oh, so what? It's Twitter. Like, people don't curse on Twitter. Come on, man.
I have an image to uphold. I don't know what that image is, but I'm supposed to...
Yeah, see, it's like you need to go back to developmental.
I do need to be developed mentally, yes. That's a long story.
Oh, boy. On that note, get the tables, folks. We'll catch you at Survivor Series.